Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast, gathering evidence from the literature. I'm Mike Pratz, and today I have with me the wonderful Jacob Avila. We are going to be discussing a paper titled Comparison of Four Views to Single View Ultrasound Protocols to Identify Clinically Significant Pneumothorax. Jacob, can't wait to hear your take on this. Go for it.
Yeah, so I'm actually really excited about this study because, I mean, there's been plenty of pneumothorax studies in the past in trauma patients, but there hasn't been one for a while, and this one I thought kind of answers a very important question. So this one was done in the University of Massachusetts, and it was published in Academic Emergency Medicine in July of 2016. Now, the question they were wondering was, in a trauma patient in whom you suspect a pneumothorax, does it matter if you do one view on the anterior chest or do four views, starting the anterior chest and moving down laterally? They ended up enrolling 260 patients over a two-year period. 139 of those patients received a single view of each chest wall, so just on the anterior part, and 121 received those four views. There were a total of 49 patients total that had a pneumothorax, or 19%, and 29 of those were clinically significant, or 11%. So the bottom line results are, in a clinically significant pneumothorax, a single view versus four-view ultrasound were equally as good at detecting that pneumothorax. Okay, now let's dive into specifics of the article. They included adult patients, so greater than 18 years old, with acute traumatic injury that were undergoing CT scan of the chest as part of their clinical care. So these are people that were going to get kind of our gold standard for pneumothorax, which is a CT scan. They excluded those deemed, quotes, too sick. They excluded pregnant patients, prisoners, and those with chest tubes already in place. People doing the scans were residents and attendings with at least 25 fast exams and 25 thoracic exams under their belt. For a single view, they placed the probe at the mid-clavicular line in the third rib space. When obtaining the four views of each hemithorax, the first image location was in the same place as that single view, and then the probe was moved inferiorly and laterally to obtain the three additional images.
Great. Now, Jacob, I was going to ask you, I think you, in this paper, they used a linear probe. What's your favorite probe to use when you're looking for a pneumothorax?
Well, it depends. If I'm looking for a pneumothorax specifically, I'm not doing the rest of the fast exam. I usually use a linear transducer just because the resolution is much better. The image looks nicer and you're able to kind of see minute little details better. But if I'm doing a full EFAS examination, I'll use the curvilinear transducer just because I don't have to switch the transducers when I'm moving on from the abdomen to the thorax. And the curvilinear actually does pretty good. I mean, there's never been a situation where I think that the patient has a pneumothorax on a curvilinear and then I throw the linear on there and it, you know, then I see something different. But I like the linear better. The curvilinear is a good second place in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I like how the curvilinear, you can sometimes see multiple rib spaces at once on it.
Yeah,
and if you're already using it for the fast exam, it does make it a lot quicker overall.
Gotcha. Agree. So here are the results. There were a total of 44 different physicians who enrolled patients in the study and obtained those ultrasound images. And I think that's actually an important point because a lot of the studies that look at pneumothorax, they'll take, you know, 1 to 2 operators, people that are kind of like the ultrasound champions or whatever, and base their stuff off of that. But this is 44 different people. So it's more reflective of what the average emergency department that has an ultrasound machine would look like.
Definitely.
So on the surface, these results show a sensitivity that is significantly lower than the previous reported studies. Did you notice that as well? I mean, it had a sensitivity of, or was it, any pneumothorax. It had a sensitivity of 54% for a pneumothorax, which is much lower than the sensitivities that we've been seeing before that. I mean, there's been 3 or 4 meta-analyses that have been published, and the sensitivity there was a bit higher. So that's something that we're going to have to talk about.
Yeah, I feel like at least sensitivities in the past were in the 90s, you know, if not sometimes low 90s, sometimes high 90s. But yeah, to be 54, that's something went wrong there.
Right. Yeah, so their data included 44 different providers with different experience levels, and it's possible that if they'd used only that 1 or 2 highly experienced providers, the numbers would be different. But honestly, I don't think that it matters because the sensitivity for a clinically significant pneumothorax is really good. It was 93% sensitive and 99.2% specific. Mike, do you want to know what the sensitivity for chest x-ray was in those clinically significant pneumothoraces?
Was it 100%?
It was 48%. You went the wrong way. Yeah, it's 48%.
Wow.
So really that overshot. Exactly. That is consistent what I've been saying, which is that ultrasound, especially when it matters the most, ultrasound is going to be more sensitive than that chest x-ray. Now, a clinically insignificant pneumothorax, the one that we didn't care about, was defined as a thin collection of air up to 1 centimeter thick in the thickest slice or seen on fewer than 5 contiguous slices. Of those clinically insignificant pneumothoraces, 100% of those were admitted for observation. And how is things over in Ohio? Here, when we have patients that basically have anything, they're usually going to get admitted by trauma. So that's kind of reflective of what happens here. Is that what happens there as well?
Yeah, usually for traumatic pneumothoraces, we would admit those. If it's a spontaneous pneumothorax, you know, I think observation for a few hours and repeating imaging is reasonable.
Sure. Now, that's important because we can see if those, quotes, insignificant pneumothoraces, if they actually mattered. And 100% of those that were admitted for observation, none of them had a chest tube placed during their hospitalization, meaning that those ones kind of sort of didn't matter as much. Of the 29 out of 49 patients, or 59% of all pneumothoraces, with a clinically significant pneumothorax, 100% of those were also admitted for observation, and 86% of those required a chest tube. So in the patients with insignificant pneumothoraces, none of them got a chest tube. In the patient with significant pneumothoraces, 86% of them got a chest tube. So that actually makes sense. And ultrasound identified those really well. Now, there were 3 false positives, and 2 of them were due to one of the things that I always tell residents, and that's that if you have a patient that's paralyzed and intubated and you're a little aggressive with your intubation, you're going to get a main stem intubation. That's what happened with 2 out of the 3 false positive. The 3rd patient had a soft tissue defect that limited the evaluation of the pleural line and was misread as a positive pneumothorax. Now, I don't really know what that means, but perhaps it has to do with the operator not looking for the pleural line beneath the ribs.
Yeah, that's true. You got to make sure that you find the ribs and follow it to the pleural line, because you can't just go by any hyperechoic linear line that you see. It could be a fascial plane or something
exactly.
else that you mistake for the pleural line.
There were 19 false negative ultrasounds. Of these, 18. So 18 out of the 19 had small, tiny, or apical pneumothoraces, which categorize them as insignificant. And none of those patients required a chest tube during their observation in the hospital. 1 patient with a false negative ultrasound had actually a large hemothorax along with a tiny apical pneumothorax, which required a chest tube inserted in the emergency department to drain that blood. This patient received pre-hospital needle decompression of the chest by paramedics with subsequent randomization to the single view ultrasound. Now, the place that they placed the probe was actually right adjacent to the site of that needle decompression. And right there, it actually showed lung, because in that one area, the lung was actually up right next to that needle decompression. So here's my thought about the 1-view versus the 4-view scan. I'm excited that there's data out there proving what I've seen clinically, and that is that clinically significant traumatic pneumothoraces will be seen in the anterior chest wall without needing to look laterally for that weird little like side pneumothorax. However, I think we need to be careful about this. What I don't want to see is somebody who casually places the probe on one part of the anterior thorax, look for 1 second and say, nope, no pneumothorax. We should probably be doing a 1-zone technique where we evaluate maybe like 2 or 3 intercostal spaces at that midclavicular line in the anterior chest wall. Also, I'm not sure that the 3rd intercostal space is the best place to look. If you look at the shape of the chest wall in a supine patient, rib space 3 is not the most anterior aspect of the chest. A better place to look is probably in rib spaces, 5 to 7. That being said, I can see that on the left side, the 3rd intercostal space may be in the most anterior part of the chest wall you can actually see, because the heart kind of gets in the way. So I usually look a little bit lower than that 3rd space. But besides that, I think that their methods, the way that they conducted the study, was actually good. And I think it really contributes to our understanding of how to use ultrasound in the evaluation of traumatic pneumothoraces.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it was really nice that they did a randomized prospective study to look at this point, and I think that really makes the results helpful for us.
Agree.
One thing that you brought up was that this being a single center, we are kind of limited by their specific protocol, and an important point of that is that all of their patients were supine with spinal immobilization prior to arrival. So I think when we talk about pneumothorax going to the most anterior part of the chest, that's important, because they had been supine.
Exactly, yeah. So it's going to go, air is going to go where it wants to go, and air is going to go anterior. And then remember, blood's going to literally do the opposite, right? Because blood's fluid, and fluid is going to be in the most bottom part of the thorax if you're laying supine.
Definitely. Another small limitation, I think, would be, could we have missed some pneumothoraces in patients that did not get chest CTs based on their trauma protocols? And it seems like they did a good job kind of randomizing it, and it's questionable whether that would have changed the overall study inclusion, but I don't think that would have been too big a deal.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it would have been that much of an issue.
So, Jacob, I guess the question at the end of the day is, are you going to do one zone, as you say, or are you going to try to go and do a little more laterally and four, closer to the four-view protocol?
Well, I already did that one kind of zone technique, and the reason why is because the FAST exam is designed for that, really for that hypotensive sick patient. And if I see a huge pneumothorax, it's going to be present anteriorly, and it saves time to just look in one section. Sure, I might miss a small pneumothorax laterally, but in the secondary assessment of that patient, I typically do actually a pretty brief ultrasound examination. I'm not super thorough initially because I'm only trying to find that big stuff. And then, depending on how sick the patient is, they might get rushed off CT scanner or order some labs, get a better history, and then go back and try and find that smaller pneumothorax. The strength of the FAST exam, like I mentioned before, is in the initial assessment of that sick trauma patient. And in that sick trauma patient, I only care what's going on in the anterior chest wall.
Totally agree. And I think this study would definitely support that. I wanted to also just bring up briefly the wide confidence intervals that you see here.
Sure.
Maybe a result of having not as many patients as you'd like. I mean, certainly this was a great population, and it's the biggest study like this that we've seen, so it's awesome. But you still see, when you're looking at the sensitivities that they calculated, mm-hmm. like for the single view, for a significant pneumothorax, it goes from 65 to 99. For the four view, it goes from 66 to 99.7. So kind of wide ranges there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the problems when you're doing research like this, is that you're doing it at a single center and you're doing it in this specific patient population. And sometimes your numbers are going to look weird like this. But for me, when I see something like this that actually agrees, I mean, this might be kind of skewed to say, but it kind of agrees with what I've seen clinically. The wide confidence intervals, definitely something that you should keep in mind, but it's still, I think the data is still very helpful. But understand that anything that you do in research, you know, and anytime you do research, there's always limitations to that research, and you got to know when to apply it. You can't just blindly look at, you know, I'm not saying you specifically, because you obviously do this already, but you can't just blindly look at the conclusion section and then completely change what you do already. Does that make sense? I mean, you that's with any research that says anything. I mean, you have to look at, like you said, you know, the confidence intervals, think about it, and then see what you've seen in real life, talk to other people about it, and see what they think. And I think at that point, you're okay to use it clinically.
Like you were alluding to, it's not as though the results of this study are really contrary to our intuition or what we've been practicing.
Right.
So I think that it is really helpful in providing an evidence basis for doing something that makes sense and would benefit us.
Yep.
All right. Well, just to summarize briefly, so this was a pretty cool randomized convenience sample of patients who were coming into the EDs as traumas. They all got randomized into either a single view in the anterior chest or four views along the anterior and lateral chest. And the results showed that one view for a clinically significant pneumothorax was 93% sensitive, compared to four views for a clinically significant pneumothorax, 93.3% sensitive. So their conclusions were, you probably can just get away with doing one view for the clinically significant pneumothorax. And I think that with some of the stipulations that we noted, we agree for the most part. What do you think, Jacob?
I agree. Great summary.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel,
more ultrasound gel podcast.